A warning, this episode contains mention of sexual assault. Kimmy is the latest film from one of the most prolific directors working today, Steven Soderbergh. It stars Zoe Kravitz as a woman with high anxiety and agoraphobia who may or may not have observed a murder via a Siri-like voice assistant. Now, this is a tight 90-minute surveillance thriller that takes its cues from some classics of the genre, including Rear Window and The Conversation. Yet, it feels contemporary and fresh, particularly as it plays against the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Aisha Harris, and today we're talking about Kimmy on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining me from his home in Denver is writer and film critic Walter Chow. Welcome back, Walter.
I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'm so glad you're here, too. So Kimmy is the name of the fictional smart speaker that plays a key role in the events of the movie. Zoe Kravitz plays Angela. She works from home for Amygdala, the company that created Kimmy. Now, her job is to comb through data and make corrections to the voice assistant system. Because of the pandemic, Angela's become a recluse who refuses to leave her apartment for any reason. Her only day-to-day in-person interactions occur with her neighbor and friend with benefits, Terry, who's played by Byron Bowers. Now, one day, while working, she stumbles across some audio from a Kimmy smart speaker that seems to have recorded an assault and murder. When she attempts to flag it for the higher-ups at Amygdala, it sends her down a mysterious rabbit hole. Steven Soderbergh directed, and the screenplay was written by David Koepp. Kimmy is also streaming now on HBO Max. Now, I went into this movie cold, and I really suggest that people who are listening to this, if you haven't seen it yet, do the same, because we're probably going to get into a little bit of spoilery territory, and I just think the experience is a little bit better when you, the less you know about it. So you've all been warned. And Walter, now I want to turn to you. What did you think of Kimmy?
I adored Kimmy. I loved it so much. It spoke to me really loudly in so many ways. It's in the Soderbergh fashion. It's brilliantly made, experimentally made in some ways. I guess, you know, we've done the spoiler thing, but she has trauma kind of unrelated to the pandemic. The pandemic has exacerbated her trauma and it's made her panicky. She's afraid to leave the house. She has agoraphobia. She has a really bad panic attack when she wants to leave. You know, when she first leaves her house, he films it like a full-blown panic attack. And it's remarkable. It really reminded me of scenes from Roman Polanski's Repulsion, where there's another young woman, hero, who is assaulted and develops anxiety. And it looks this way. It's from her perspective, just like Soderbergh shoots it in Kimmy. And it's just brilliant. I loved everything about it. How about you?
Oh, I was very much in for this. First of all, I love the tight running time. And I think that at this point, if you know anything about Soderbergh, you know he's a very pragmatic and economical filmmaker. Like, he edits as he's filming, and he is one of those efficient filmmakers who gets things done really quickly. And he does it in a way that, in most cases, you never feel as though you've been slighted in any way. I think this movie does a really great job of doling out details about this character, about the Angela character, and about the world she lives in and why she is the way she is without giving away too much information. It's like just the right amount. And so as it's happening, you're kind of piecing together, okay, you see people with masks, but not everyone is wearing masks. So it makes you think, okay, when is this set? And Soderbergh has actually talked about how this movie was actually pitched to him by David Koepp before the pandemic happened. So this was sort of an added layer of effect for the film. And I think the way in which this movie sort of puts it at a time, a moment in time where we are right now, where yes, there are still, depending on where you live, there are probably plenty of people still wearing masks when you're outside, but not everyone is wearing masks. I think like this is going to be a really interesting time capsule to look back on years from now and sort of see the way he's playing with the pandemic, but also really playing with Angela's fears. And I think to me, this is probably one of the far better pandemic movies that we've had so far. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I was really circumspect about watching pandemic movies. I don't really want to. I feel like they will be too much of the time. And so I was worried, you know, if Soderbergh's going to do a pandemic movie, I'm not so sure that I want that. I don't want to see all the masks and everything. I don't want it to be the plot. And to your point, it's not. And he's so brilliant about telling character through action. You know, you don't get a lot of exposition where people are saying, you know, it's been 2 years since this happened. And, you know, it's like, I just don't want that, you know. And he trusts us. He trusts his audience to kind of be emotional, to be these characters of the world and understand what someone is going through. You can look at this with empathy. And it's interesting to me that the company that she works for, amygdala, is the part of the brain that processes emotion, mm-hmm. that processes those impulses. And so, you know, throughout, I think Soderbergh is saying, I'm gonna make a superhero movie, if you will. And the secret power is empathy, mm-hmm. is that she's good at her job because she can listen to all these strangers talking and understand what they mean and understand what they feel. And indeed, that's what ultimately gets her into the main plot of this film, is that she can empathize with the tone of voice, with the circumstances, with the words being used. And again, a trigger warning that this film does deal with sexual assault, with sexual violence. It deals with those things, but she's absolutely empathetic to what she hears. And I think it's just such a beautifully constructed movie. You mentioned The Conversation, another movie about a person who could hear. And of mm-hmm. course, in that movie, he's wrong. But, you know, in this movie, she's closer to the truth.
Yeah. I will say, even though it does deal with this trauma, it does so in not explicit ways, which I also think is to its benefit. We see things, but we don't see things, if that makes sense. And The Conversation is something that really came up for me, especially in the moment where we are seeing her sort of discover this audio of a possible murder and the way in which it's filmed. There's a little bit of sort of overlaying of imagery and dissolves going on there. And I think it's really, really effective. And it does have a sort of 70s kind of quality to it in terms of the filmmaking, and even the music, like the way it's composed, feels very kind of like a throwback, but in the best way possible.
Oh, so much so. You're really speaking to my heart. I mean, the movies of the American 70s are just my favorite movies of all time. I think it's the best decade of movies ever, anywhere in the world. It's a bold statement.
Very bold.
Yeah. There's so many great films from that era, and all of them are auteur-driven. They're author-driven. They're directorial visions. They're individual expressions of fear, of paranoia, of despair. You can't trust anybody. You can't trust the government, especially. You can't trust the police. You can't trust religion. You can't trust all the things that we wanted to trust throughout the 50s. All of a sudden, through the 60s and 70s, have gone away. And what really gave me a lot of joy about Kimmy was that I was watching the whole thing with a lot of appreciation, like technical appreciation, all the things that you mentioned, that the throwback to the 70s. I mean, nobody is better really at making movies on a technical level than Soderbergh or Spielberg or Jane Campion. You know, these guys are just so good. But what really moved me about this is that it doesn't end on a down note. It ends with all this hope, this idea that, yes, we have trauma. Yes, we are broken. Yes, we are lonesome. Yes, we are all of these things and we're afraid. But there's hope if we reach out. There's hope in this. And my favorite scene in the movie is a scene where, you know, there's a protest going on. We're not really sure what the protest is about, but there's a protest on the street.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And she gets picked up by a black van. You know, we saw some of those images during the BLM protests where, you know, police would just roll up in a black van and start grabbing people and driving off. And the sense of horror and despair. But in the film, the way that he shoots it is that she gets picked up by the black van and then the crowd resists and says, no, not today. And they they open the back of the van. And the idea that we're kind of post-superhero now, there's no one person that's going to come save us. And the new heroism is when all of the oppressed band together and say that we're not going to take it anymore. And that hopefulness, that path forward, we don't see it in the 70s, but we see it now in this movie. And it's like, man, I get what you're doing, I think. You're going to take your cues from all of these dark, we can't win scenario movies, and you're going to say, we got through it then. We didn't think we would, but we did. So maybe we're going to get through this too. And that's not something that I feel a lot, that we're going to get through it.
Yeah.
So watching a movie like this, oh man, I felt a little glimmer of hope. And every little glimmer is precious now, you know?
Yeah. I was on the edge of my seat during that entire moment where she is in the van and then she's trying to get out and the other people outside are helping her. I just love that moment. I also just really appreciate Zoe Kravitz here, because I think in a lot of previous roles, she's been sort of misused or underused. I think of her role in Big Little Lies, where I was like, I feel as though you just wanted to throw in a black woman here and you didn't do anything with it amongst these rich white ladies who are angry and upset about things. And I think High Fidelity was sort of, that TV show was sort of inching towards what we're getting here with Kimmy. She felt like it, because she was the star of the show, she felt like a really fully thought out character. But here, I think she's playing with a lot of different things, because so much of this is her being by herself and only interacting with people via computers and via video. And so what I really love about it is that she really taps into this anxiety of like what many of us have felt like and what some people are still experiencing, not wanting to go outside, not feeling comfortable to do so, and how that messes with your brain. And I think the close-up shots on her face, like it helps, of course, that she's gorgeous. But like beyond that, she also just is really good at conveying the anxiety and the internal struggle that she has. You mentioned her like trying to leave the house. Like that in itself is just like the way Soderbergh shoots it, the close-ups of her hand, her fidgeting, her face, all of that was just really, really intense. And I think like so far to me, this is peak Zoe Kravitz, and I can't wait to see her do more like this or similar.
She's so good in this movie. And, yeah. You know, it's a big task for anybody to be front and center for the entire movie. And she is, and she kills it. You know, the film that this reminded me a lot of, too, was Anatoly Litvak's Sorry, Wrong Number from 1948.
Yes, with Barbara Stanwyck?
Yes, Barbara Stanwyck. And Burt Lancaster. And Stanwyck is another shut-in in that one. And she's disabled in a way that the men in the movie dismiss as psychological. They say, you know, oh, she's just making it up. She's just imagining it. But the rest of the film is her trying to convince people to believe her. You know, you see that kind of bubbling up a little bit around the edges of Kimmy, especially when the Zoe Kravitz character goes in to talk to HR at her company. And, you know, there's all that's thrown back at her. It's hard enough to be heard, I think, in that environment, especially if you're a woman, especially if you're a woman of color. All the chips are stacked against her, and the horror of her knowledge that she's being put off, her knowledge that she's being patronized, it so reminded me of a 1940s kind of thing. And it's so current.
Yeah.
Kravitz, she's the whole spectrum. She's joy. She's horror. She's everything in this movie.
She's cunning. She's always
so smart.
Always trying to be one step ahead. And sometimes it works. And then other scenes, it's not. And I also love that sort of push and pull, how it's like not perfect. There are moments where she gets away, but then technology, and this is a whole theme of Soderbergh, is just like technology and how it really screws up or makes things better in some ways.
Yeah. And to that point, the Kimmy technology, I think he's sort of like ambivalent about it. You know, the Alexa technology, whatever it might be, is like, you know, I don't think he's really making that many judgments about the technology. He's just sort of saying, yeah, it's a powerful tool. You know, it's very dangerous to have this tool, but it also is the means of connection for her and for us. It's beautifully ambivalent. And I think that's how I am with technology too, where I'm like, what's the push-pull here? And I think the film deals with that without solving it, you know, without coming down on it. And there's a wonderful current contemporariness to this film that I think will persist. I don't think it's a film of the moment. I think it's an all-timer.
Absolutely. Off of that thought, where does this stand for you in terms of Soderbergh's oeuvre of the last, like, 5-10 years? I admit I've missed the last couple of movies before this. The last film of his that I saw was High Flying Bird from 2019. Have you seen all those other movies?
I have. I'm a stan, as the kids say. I love Steven Soderbergh, and I love this period he's with HBO here, where he just seems free. He said a while ago that he's retired. I'm not going to make any more of these things. I'm going to go do The Nick on TV and everything. And I think that period for him really was rejuvenating. I mean, I think he felt like this real freedom to do stuff. He did Logan Lucky, which is this free, wonderful.
That was fun. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. He did Unsane, which is kind of a take on Kimmy.
Yeah.
You know, another film,
similar.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, similar, you know, and really good, I thought, too. Really experimental and interesting. And then I love High Flying Bird. I love Let Them All Talk. It's so revelatory and tender and surprising and harsh. Kimmy is kind of harsh. There's like a sex scene in Kimmy that I found to be kind of harsh, kind of in your face. Like, I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key for me with Soderbergh, is the surprise. Like, his noir, No Sudden Move. I don't know if I loved it the first time when I watched it again, because I'm like, how could I not love this? It's got everything I like. It's amazing. It's so good. I think I was just distracted by the style, by the experimentation of it.
Yeah.
He does his own editing. He does his own cinematography. He's just in control now. And he's choosing to end his Magic Mike trilogy next. And I'm so excited about that. You know?
I am so curious about that, because if I'm being completely honest, I thought Magic Mike XXL was better than the first Magic Mike. And he didn't direct Magic Mike XXL. He produced it, but he didn't direct it. So I'm like, we'll see. But yeah.
I mean, he's just good. And he's one of those guys that's earned, with me anyway, this benefit of a doubt whenever. He could make anything and I'd watch it.
Yeah.
You know, he could make something part 20 and I'd be like, oh good, I cannot wait to see Steven Soderbergh's, you know, Spider Boys part 30, you know, the spider. Soderbergh, he knows how to land it, I guess is what I'm saying, and it's great.
He does. And I have to say, one of the things that I've always appreciated about him as well is just like, he's been one of those white male directors who is frequently back to the beginning of his days working with people of color, working with women as leads, as co-stars. Like, I appreciate that. And I think he does it in a way that it doesn't feel like he's trying to get points. Like, it's just natural and organic. And I love that we can say that about his legacy. And I also now really want to go and watch those movies that you just mentioned that I haven't seen yet, especially Let Them All Talk.
It feels like to me, without knowing, it feels like he listens.
Yes.
Like, he's listening to his cast. He's listening to his collaborators. And I feel like with him, he's reduced barriers to him. It's just kind of him with a camera and he's walking around following people, sometimes on his iPhone. It seems like he's reducing all these layers for his cast and his screenwriters, collaborators to talk to him. You know, especially in a movie like Kimmy, which is just so intimately about trauma and about experiencing, you know, one person's experience of the world. How do you do that if it's just your opinion? I don't think it's possible. Mm. The amount of empathy and the amount of expression that Kravitz is able to put into this film is, it can only be, in my mind, a product of collaboration. And sort of testament to that, too, is people keep wanting to work with him. The score is by Cliff Martinez, and this is the 10th film, I think, that Martinez has done with them. They both started with Six Lives and Videotape, but, you know, the score really reminds me of the score that they did together for Solaris. Mm. And people keep coming back to work with him over and over and over again. And I think that says something too about not only his greatness as a filmmaker, but his greatness as a collaborator.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that we really liked Kimmy and we hope everyone goes and watches it again. It's only 90 minutes. And if you don't have a ton of time, I think it's the perfect little snack to enjoy if you're looking for something a little mysterious, creepy, but also really thoughtful and just like edge of your seat. Love it.
And it's not a downer.
So we want to know what you think about Kimmy. You can find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And one last thing before we go, we are going to be talking about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and we want your questions. You can email us a voice memo with your question to pchh@npr.org. Again, you can send us a voice memo with your question to pchh@npr.org. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks so much for being here, Walter.
I'm so happy to be here.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We'll see you all tomorrow when we'll be talking about the HBO drama, The Gilded Age.